Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reliving the Extreme. Nate Maxson, your host, here with you, along with my brother Aaron.
Hello, everybody.
And Chad Austin Monet is here with us as well.
Yeah, jolly old good Chad at Austin Monet today. I'm in a real fucking good mood.
And this week we are going to be discussing the episode of ECW TV from April the 30th, 1996. And it features more of a continuation of what the quote unquote cliffhanger was from last week's show, but we will get into that momentarily. Before we do, I guess mainly we can say this is an ECW podcast, so I can use this as a spur for the conversation that I wanted to have. Finally, this year, it has been announced that Paul Heyman is going to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I would say it's about time, but I think Paul's probably one of those guys where he was like, pretty much, they're probably thinking, it doesn't matter. You're here anyway. We'll do it when it's right place, right time. WrestleMania's in Philadelphia.
From reports that I read, and it's fucking internet, so take it what you want, or take it how you want. But there's been, I guess, a couple times where they asked him to go in or whatever, and he said no because he wasn't ready to do it. So I don't know if he was just not wanting to do it because he wasn't retired yet or whatever, but.
Well, he
decided to do it now. So,
well, I mean, it is the perfect, you know, it's the perfect storm. It's WrestleMania 40. It's, you know, we're probably, I say this, you never know. We could be watching WrestleMania at the end of WrestleMania. It could still be Roman's music playing, but we're probably at the end of the Bloodline storyline, or at least the long part of the Bloodline storyline. So I don't know what he's going to do after that. I'm wondering, do you think, because they put Brock back up on their website, his bio and everything. Do you think they're, I mean, obviously they're like, all Brock did was ask for to watch a woman pee. Maybe it's not that bad. Brett, let's get him back in the fold because he's fucking Brock Lesnar and he's a monster. And is he the one to induct Heyman? Who inducts Paul Heyman into the Hall of Fame?
I mean, you're not going to let Brock Lesnar talk. No, it's
Punk.
No, you're not.
Punk's putting him in.
It has to be Punk, yeah. I mean
he's going to be there anyway, and he's hurt. This is going to be his WrestleMania weekend moment, is inducting Paul.
I mean, there's a short kind of list of people who seemingly should put him in, but you're not going to – Bully's not going to do it. You know, Todd, no. Dreamer, no. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
After that, then you have to go to WWE, and you're not going to let Brock. There's no chance there.
That's
nobody in the company is that stupid.
Here to induct Paul Heyman, Curtis Axel.
Definitely don't want anything to be Ryback.
Reggie the sommelier, whatever his name is. Reginald.
Here to induct Paul Heyman, hat guy.
Yeah, dude, just anybody. The Hawaiian shirt guy.
Buck Robley.
What if sign guy did it? And all I do is had a bunch of signs up there.
It'd be like the NXS video.
Yeah.
Remember the NXS video where he just has the cue card looking things and just, yeah, he can just play the ECW theme and sign guy just has the cue cards.
But that was stolen from Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. No shit. That's right. It was.
Yeah, it'll be Punk.
Oh, it has to be. I mean, there's no chance that Punk's not going to go WrestleMania weekend without a WrestleMania payday.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants that payday. And, I mean, what do you get for the Hall of Fame? 10 grand? You get 10 grand in a ring for going in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure that, you know, Punk's still under contract, so he's getting paid either way. But, yeah, he's got to do something for WrestleMania. Yeah. So, and plus, he's the only one that could talk for him. I mean, it's, you know, Medusa was the other name I heard, you know,
mm-hmm.
She's logical. She makes sense. She could totally do it. And I would not have a problem with her doing it either, but it has to be Punk.
The, And I wonder how. I was thinking, will Heyman's speech be like Ric Flair's speech long, or?
Oh, no chance, dude. No, I think Paul's smart enough to know to get over, get the fuck out of there. He's not gonna do Hillbilly Jim. No. I mean, it's gonna be a solid what do you think? 5, 6, 7 minutes of an ECW chant, probably 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
Probably during it. So we're probably talking about 10, 11 minutes right there, just with ECW chants. Joey Styles could do it.
Oh my God. That would actually be pretty fucking cool if they brought Joey Styles in to do it. But now you guys are probably right. It's probably gonna be Punk.
Yeah. I would just love to be at the meeting, and just see if somebody actually did pitch Brock. Like, what the, you know what I mean? You know, just as somebody was like, I got an idea. How about Brock? And just as little if, everybody else's.
If they would, it would be funny. I know they won't, but if they would have Brock be the one to induct him, it would be great if he just came up to the microphone. They said, here to induct Paul Heyman, introduce Paul Heyman into the WWE Hall
say
of Fame.
Say something Brock stupid, Lister. Paul.
Yes. And if Brock just said, say something stupid, Paul, and then Paul came out and made his speech. This is shaping up to be a good class this year. The U.S. Express with Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda.
What's that, Mark II for both of them?
No, Rotunda's not in yet.
Not as IRS?
Mm-mm.
No, nope. No.
I know I've said it on the show before. I will never discount Rotunda as a wrestler, and he definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame. I was just never personally a big fan. He just was never my guy. But he definitely deserves to be in. I mean, for the career that he had, and he's worked for WWE for fucking ever. He worked for obviously the NWA, WCW. He was all through the 80s and 90s.
Oh, dude, and then, totally. He's been every territory.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think putting them in together is probably just a vehicle for that family, you know, because I don't know if Bray's going. I don't know if they're going to induct Bray Wyatt posthumously or not. But if they don't, this is at least a way for that family to be represented in the ceremony.
Well, they haven't announced anybody yet that's dead, right? That they're going to put in, have they?
No.
Okay, so this goes.
Huh? Technically, they have.
Who?
Muhammad Ali's dead.
Ah, well, yeah, that's true. Oh,
Jesus Christ. He's not really dead.
The funny thing is, they announced today that Thunderbolt Patterson was going in, and I thought he was dead. I honest to God, I thought he was dead. I really did. No offense to Thunderbolt, but I thought he had passed on, but I guess not. He's still kicking.
Look, just because you should be doesn't mean that you are. I mean, it doesn't work that way. Oh, Thunderbolt's going to be a great speech, dude. Oh, I can just see that speech now. He's going to turn into a race thing. I just know he is.
Who might shit on Ole?
Oh, no, he's not going to shit on Ole. Ole was his friend.
Dude, I thought they had heat.
Oh, it's going to be great. He's going to start talking about a union. They're going to start playing the music.
We can tell.
I don't know who's going to induct him. I have a feeling U.S. Express is going to probably be inducted by Bo. I could see them bringing Bo in to have him induct his dad and Barry Windham. I don't know who's going to induct Thunderbolt. Maybe Road Dogg, because I know the Armstrongs and Thunderbolt were close, but I don't know who's gonna induct Thunder.
I was just trying to think of who they have in their under their umbrella that has a connection to him other than Road Dogg.
Does he work there still?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Degeneration X pretty much runs the WWE at this point.
Yeah, Road Dogg's like their on the road house show guy. Like, he books their house shows and does all that shit.
That's a great job for a recovering addict to put him on the road.
Medusa's obviously going to induct Bull Nakano. There's no doubt in that.
Oh, dude, she was on Busted Open today, and she was good. Like, I mean, you can already tell that she's excited about doing it. And just her telling whatever story she told today about it was, you know, you could already see that she was excited about doing it.
And she fucking looks great, man.
She's got to be what? She's got to be 60-something?
I want to say when she did the WWF thing with her and Medusa, I want to say she was in her maybe. I don't think she was even 25 yet then, because she rose pretty early in her life in Japan. So, but yeah, she'd still probably be at least in her late 50s, if not 60.
I mean, she was in All Japan Women's in like 1989. That I know, that I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she probably spent 2-3 years there before that, you know, in the dojos or whatever kind of thing. But yeah, she's going to be good. She came across pretty good today. I was pretty impressed with Medusa. Because I thought they were bringing her on to induct probably Paul or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's inducted Bull Nakano.
Yeah, she is.
And
Bull Nakano is 56.
So she's younger than Medusa just by a couple years.
Medusa, man, she out of all them 80s wrestling ladies, she's the one that she kind of kept together. She still looks good.
Who, Bull Nakano?
No, Medusa.
Bull Nakano looks good too.
Well, she looks better than she did then.
She doesn't look like the Bull Nakano you remember, that's for sure.
Because she's got somebody else's liver. She's not even herself anymore. She had cirrhosis. She was a big drunk. She made me envious. Bull Nakano.
Who else we got? Heyman, US Express, Bull Nakano,
T-Bolt,
Thunderbolt, and that sounds like Rocky's grandmother's going in.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Rocky's grandmother.
Yep, Rocky's grandmother.
They're just making
it up. She's going to be inducted by Hornswoggle.
My Uncle Mike. He's going in and just... I mean, the phone rang the other day for me, and it said unknown, and I was like, oh, shit. Philadelphia. I guess I ain't going in.
The other name I heard, and they might announce it, and it might not happen, and when I read it, I was, like, super excited if it was going to be a thing, was there was a rumor going around for a minute that Haku was going in.
A minute. There you go. There's your rumor. Yeah, I didn't hear that, but nah, he ain't going in.
And they're not done announcing people, but I'm surprised there hasn't been at least, and I know Paulie is the main event, but I'm surprised there hasn't been at least one more ECW-centric name with it being in Philadelphia. Of course, this isn't Vince's Hall of Fame anymore. It's Triple H's now, so it doesn't necessarily have to have a theme, you know, I don't know. Vince always wanted to have some sort of a theme with the Hall of Fame, whereas it seems like Triple H is just actually inducting people on their fucking merit.
Yeah, but but if you think about it, it's getting pretty much too hard now to find anybody that's still around that doesn't already work for another company. You know what I mean? Or you're starting to get slim pickings. You know, Tommy works for TNA.
Well, but I think they'd be willing to work with him to get somebody from TNA. I mean, they had what's her name in the Rumble.
No. I'm not saying that it's not out of the realm. I'm just saying they're not going to go there yet. That, you know, Tommy still works, you know, and the Dudleys are already in. I mean, what, Taz? He still works for AEW. Yeah. I mean,
a lot of people don't understand how Hunter's going with that company and how it works. Like, not to bring back up Sting, but I don't know if we talked about it since then. Like, everybody got pissed off because, you know, Sting's last match happened, and everybody was bitching because the WWE wasn't mentioning it. But then, like,
they did afterwards.
The next Raw afterwards, they brought it up, and everybody's like, "Oh no, they brought it up because they mentioned that everybody else was talking about it, and they weren't." It's like, no, they brought it up afterwards because they weren't in the business of selling other people's pay-per-views.
Dude, seriously,
didn't like, you that fucking pay-per-view ended. Yeah, so then they were like, "Oh, Sting had his last match. Congratulations, buddy." But why are we going to mention it before to sell our competition's fucking papers?
Well, not to mention, I love how the internet wrestling goobs think that anything they have to fucking say influences anything the WWE does. Like, the WWE doesn't give a shit about, like, they pretty much think that they were the ones that made it so Cody was going to face Roman at WrestleMania. That was the plan from the beginning. It was called pro wrestling. It was a work, and they worked you. But somehow these internet goofs think that they're the ones that are responsible just because one time in the history of wrestling it happened with Daniel Bryan. It does not mean that the WWE gives a shit what you say on your Twitter. I'm just saying.
Pretty much, yeah.
But I do. I love it when they get all high and mighty, like, we influence change. No, no, you didn't.
even if you did it once, there you go. There's your lightning in the bottle. It ain't gonna happen again.
You didn't influence change. You bought into their fucking angle, you idiot.
Yeah, you actually helped them by increasing their traffic on social media and shit, you fucking moron. You did exactly what they wanted you to do.
Yep. All right, let's get this nonsense over.
All right, yeah.
Fuck.
there isn't a ton to say anyway, so.
Oh, there's a decent amount. It's not one of them shows where it was only just the recap show or anything. Yeah, there's stuff. I didn't say it was a lot of stuff, but there's stuff.
Stuff.
Well, yes, we open this show. Like I said, it's April 30th, 1996. We open the show with where we left off last week with the whole situation with lesbian Beulah and lesbian Kimona. And then, you know, obviously Shane Douglas's character was motivated to try to make this affect Tommy Dreamer and Raven. It did affect Raven, but it affected Tommy Dreamer in the way Shane Douglas didn't think it would. Tommy Dreamer says, I'll take them both. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm hardcore. I'll take them both.
That's what I wrote down. I'm hardcore.
I'm hardcore.
That was stupid. Dreamer is dumb.
He wound up, if that was a thing, he would have wound up in a fucking beanbag sitting in the corner just watching.
Well, so would I.
He'd be sitting in that chair in the hotel room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I'm not getting involved. I'm watching it too.
Or he's sitting in like one of those inflatable King of the Ring chairs in 96.
The girls just constantly hear from the corner because it's like that plastic fucking anyway. Tommy, you're making us uncomfortable. But yeah, that's the story. There is Raven's upset about it, and it kind of gets to him in his psyche, as Douglas intended, and Tommy's happy about it. And this rolls into the Hostile City Showdown ECW World Championship match. It is Raven versus Shane Douglas for the title. And there's quite a bit that goes down during this match. This is your ECW at its wildest kind of during this whole thing, as far as a title match goes. And they do emphasize that this match has to have a definitive finish, pretty much.
But doesn't it start off with an angle? Like with the whole Raven, with the with Shane double crossing Dreamer first? And then the brawl break out before the match starts?
I think if I wrote my notes down right, they actually start the match with a lockup, and then the drama happens in the middle.
Okay. I just kind of took it as like everything just happened and then the match just kind of broke out in the middle of, like always. You know what I mean? I guess I was just used to it.
Now, the start of the match was basically Shane saying that Kimona and Beulah were scissoring each other, and Dreamer or Raven thought it was going to bring Dreamer down and all that shit, and it didn't really work, and he's just dejected, and now he doesn't have either one of his women. He's just kind of sulking through the match.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a decent brawl. I mean, typical ECW Raven brawl to begin with. This was all typical Raven shit to begin with. All of it was all typical Raven shit, honestly. And they brawled back, you know, out of the building, back into, you know, all that shit's Raven.
And Douglas does quite a bit more of the quote unquote hardcore stuff than he normally does during this match too. You know, there's the cheese grater spot, and Douglas is usually the guy in ECW that he tries to have a wrestling match, but in this match he kind of, I guess, quote unquote, sunk down to Raven's level and wrestled a hardcore match with Raven. Lots of outside the ring action.
Outside the ring action.
And that's just Kimona and Beulah.
Yeah, pretty much. What a maneuver. I just want to see the visual of Kimona and Beulah scissoring. That would get a huge pop. My whole...
Yeah, the by the inflatable chair that Tommy's sitting in. this might be a stupid question, but like, there's a tale of two Shane Douglases. Like in like 98, he was a big motherfucker in 98. Like he was swolled up.
Yeah.
But wrestling wise, shape wise, like in shape wise, what would you say is like the better in shape Shane? Like this version of him? Or the 98 Shane. That makes sense.
It's always kind of hard to tell with Shane, because Shane's always one of them kind of guys that's always like, he's always kind of like flagged by some sort of an injury. So he's always been more of a smoke and mirrors guy. You know what I mean? Because he's rarely ever healthy. I mean, let's be honest. He really ever is. So, like, for him just to do a regular match, you know, I mean, I don't even remember the last actual long match that Shane actually did without smoke and mirrors. This wasn't it.
Yeah, I don't know that. I'm just saying, like, I'm not even going to say that he's near the, like, talent like a Kurt Hennig was, but, like, in like the 80, 88, 89, 90s or whatever, he was kind of built like Shane. And then when he got to like WCW, he was like he was thicker, you know, but he was still the worker. I don't know if what I'm saying makes sense. Like, I don't know what
Shane had a body. Shane's body, I think, sometimes also kind of reflected how he was feeling about it, the business and his career at the time, because there'd be times where he looked really good and he'd look really in shape. And then, like, you know, he gets into, say, WCW in like 99, and he's like fat wearing pajama tops. And they weren't pajama tops, but his shirts look like pajama tops. And he's kind of plump. And, you know, I mean, I think it kind of he's one of those people whose body type and his appearance reflected his attitude a lot of the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I could agree with that. Yeah. I see that, because I mean, I could go back to, I mean, Christ, Continental Shane, you know what I mean? All that, you know.
Yeah.
He's had so many different, you know, and then once he got on the gas, that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. That's when he really started falling apart physically, and his work suffered like everybody else. Like, you know, he's one of them kind of guys that, that aren't really meant to be 250, 255, 60 pounds. You know what I mean? But yet he did it. And, you know, he paid the price for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did have, you're right too, Chad. He had that career where it probably never reached the heights it could have because he spent so much of it injured. So you got this start stop thing. That's how it always was for Batista in the WWE, you know, because he was so jacked and everything. And since he's so jacked, he's prone to get injured, and they're about to strap the rock. And I know they gave him the world title and stuff sometimes, but you're about to strap the rocket to this guy and make him the top guy. And oh, look, he's fucking hurt again. And then they get to a certain point where they're like, we just can't.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like when Cornette talked about Batista, he fucking showed up at OVW and he had like 2% body fat. And he was like, oh my God, you gotta start eating cheeseburgers and shit, or you're gonna be ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, our match here, like I said, the drama kind of starts in the middle of the match. So I'll try to keep my notes or keep up with my notes here. If you guys correct me, you correct me. But there's a point in the match where Brian Lee comes out to make an attempt to help Raven, but Tommy Dreamer comes out to stop Brian Lee, which causes commotion and distraction. And Douglas is distracted by this, but he winds up getting pissed off at Dreamer for being out there. So that's where I think you got that a little bit backwards, Chad, match flow wise. This is when Dreamer, in the middle of the match here, is when Dreamer and Douglas start going at it. And there's a brawl between them.
Yeah, Dreamer ruins everything.
Yes, he does. Tommy Bad Dreamer. Yeah. I mean, is it typical how Brian Lee's matches are and shit? They all just start somewhere else.
Yes, pretty much. The Blue Meanie tries to get involved in the match. He tries to interfere and totally screws it up, which, I mean, that's par for the course for the character, and that was fun. Stevie gets involved with a Stevie kick. That doesn't pan out for Raven either. Then Shane Douglas goes to do the figure four. Again, I'm trying to keep up with my notes here. And he takes off Raven's boot because we all know that the story has been for the past month or so that Raven has foot problems, whether it's the gout or a broken foot or whatever it is. Raven's got some shit going on with his foot. So
drop gout.
He's got the drop foot. Yeah.
Yeah, foot fetish.
Tony Atlas is here.
He can't stop talking about his feet.
Then, okay. So, Douglas removes Raven's boot, tries to put him in the figure four, but then one of the Bruise Brothers comes out from under the ring, distracts Douglas. Raven takes the boot, which is the loaded boot, hits Douglas with the boot, and gets the 1-2-3 for the pin to retain the ECW championship. I hope my notes made some sort of sense. Because like I say all the time, sometimes with these type matches, it's hard to take notes because you're trying to watch the fucking match. That's how sometimes I look at like on Pro Wrestling Torch's site or whatever, I'll see like in real time, Wade Keller is doing like a blow-by-blow report of Raw. I'm like, how are you watching the show and typing this shit at the same time? But whatever. Anyway. But I hope my description of the match, Aaron, did I miss anything?
No.
No, not really. It was a big clusterfuck. And
I didn't even have Blue Meanie's name on my notes or any of that nonsense. So no, you pretty much covered it all.
Yeah, it was a big clusterfuck, but it wasn't a bad one. It was a good ECW, like Chad said, smoke and mirrors match, and nothing wrong with it. I enjoyed it.
Yep, it was what it was, man. It was typical ECW stuff. I got no problem with it.
Everybody's character was true to form, you know.
Yep.
Raven trying to do as little work as possible, having his stooges do the work for him.
He had his little cronies in there. And it got Shane and Tommy's little subplot put in there and everything. It was good.
The next segment I have a tad bit of an issue with, because I don't understand why. Like, from a if pro wrestling is real, if I'm suspending belief, why did any of this happen? So Shane Douglas is talking about how he wants to be the ECW champion. Everybody knows he lives, breathes, eats, sleeps the ECW championship. And then for some reason, unbeknownst to me, Too Cold Scorpio comes out. And it's like, I got the world TV title. This is my belt, and you don't have my belt. And Douglas is pretty much like, I don't want your belt. I just said I want to be the world champion. I don't want to be what my thing is, what is Scorpio's fucking motivation for even coming out here? He's the challenger is supposed to challenge the champion. Why is the champion challenging a challenger?
Dude, I already had your belt.
Yeah, right. What the fuck do I want your fucking shitty ass belt for?
My biggest takeaway is the every week fucking takeaway of Shane, where he was talking about ECW is the only company that matters, and I want to be the ECW champion. Nothing else matters, but he has to bring up Shawn Michaels.
Well, it's either Shawn Michaels or Ric Flair. Every single time.
All you care about is ECW, then why the fuck are you talking about people that are better than you then?
Well, he wasn't going to bring up Jeff Farmer from Five Star or Burt Prentice. Well, what about Colorado Kid?
I'll tell you what I want you, Eric Embry.
You think you're a better NWA world champion than me, Colorado?
Yeah, I see your point though, Aaron. It's like the only brand that matters is Pepsi. But you know what? I'm going to spend 10 minutes talking about Coca-Cola.
Yeah, the logic behind it, whether it's valid or not, is that I think Shane was talking about the ECW championship was the title that matters and the only one that matters. And like Too Cold took disrespect on it, saying like, you know, I'm the TV champion. I'm the guy that works every night and whatever. I think that's the way I took it, was that it was Too Cold
taking offense to what Douglas was saying.
Yeah, but still, yeah. He took offense to it. Yet Shane still shit on it. You know what I mean? Like,
Shane shouldn't have shit on it.
I know, he still didn't give a shit. Yeah, that was like, it was like saying, like, dude, what are you even doing out here? It didn't make the belt any mean anymore. It didn't do anything for Scorpio, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was trying to put himself into a spot where Shane's like, dude, you don't even belong in this spot. That's what it seemed like to me. And where did they get Scorpio at the end of this anyway? It was it for him, wasn't it?
Scorpio's like the guy at the bar who the hot chick hasn't noticed all night. And then he walks up to the hot chick and he's like, if you want to fuck me, I'll fuck you. And it's like, I wasn't even thinking about you. I didn't even know you were here.
He ends up getting beat up by Shane anyway.
Yeah, whipped with his own belt. I hate with the ECW.
Yeah.
I hate the ECW TV title belt, by the way. The no side plates on it make it look really awkward. Anyway.
But it's heavy, though. I'll tell you that. It is heavy. Because it's like made out of concrete. I'm telling you it's made out of concrete. I'm not just saying that for saying it. It is fucking heavy.
They have the 10 pounds of gold and they have the 50 pounds of concrete.
Yep.
But yeah, then Douglas and Scorpio start fighting. Douglas pretty much punks Scorpio out, starts whipping him with his own championship. And then the Sandman comes out. He eats a belly to belly from Shane, gets a cane shot. And then the Sandman gets on top of Scorpio to protect Scorpio from Shane Douglas. This was silly. I didn't like it. I didn't like this.
I love a good meaningless run-in. Like when the guy sitting in the locker room and he just swears, he's like, you know what, I can't take this anymore. My buddy's getting beat up. I'm gonna run out there and save him. No, you're not. No. You know what I mean? Like, stop him.
You did absolutely no good.
He ended up getting his ass beat too.
It's a good example of I think they had a good idea of what they wanted to do, but it was a bad execution. You know what I mean? Like, I think they were trying to make the TV title seem important, but the way it was executed just didn't work.
Yeah, well, let's just say this in their defense. I totally understand what you mean, Eric, but this had to have been edited at some point, and there was probably a lot more going on that if you would have had a lot of time to air the whole entire thing, it probably would have made a little more sense to see how it all played out. But for TV sakes, it had to be cut down a little bit, and they had to rush to the storyline, you know, get the points across. So, but your point was definitely well taken, Aaron. I totally, I 100% agree with everything you said. But yeah, it just, enough. Fuck.
But then after this little debacle here, we go to Joey Styles, who recaps. Talks about, yeah, he does the recaps, and he talks about also how next week we are going to see Sabu versus Rob Van Dam on ECW TV, which I think this is the first time we've seen Sabu versus RVD.
But do we see it?
And then I think so. Maybe. It's probably one of those matches where it's a half minutes of it. We then see footage of Wilmington, Delaware ECW show from the night before or what have you. And it's Missy Hyatt in the ring with Fred the Elephant Boy from the Howard Stern Show.
Wait a minute. I didn't see this.
Fred the Elephant Boy wants to fuck Missy Hyatt and she smacks him.
He's Fred the Elephant Boy. Do you think he just wants to fuck Missy Hyatt? I mean, Jesus Christ. He wants to fuck everybody.
And he smells like that cheese you get with a Slim Jim.
Oof. That's not good cheese. Fred the Elephant cheese.
It's not my favorite Rat Pack moment in wrestling history. My favorite, like, Howard Stern Whack Pack moment is the Whack Pack wound up on fucking Raw. Crackhead Bob
Beetlejuice
Crackhead Bob wound up on commentary on WWF Raw. And
you got a problem with that?
The match, there wasn't anything wrong with it, but the match was over and Jim Ross was like, thanks, Bob. See you later, crackhead. Just to say,
Jim Ross channeling Hank Hill. That's what it sounds like to me.
Thanks, see you Bob. Later, crackhead.
See you later, crackhead.
Crackhead. It's fucking great.
I couldn't tell you how many guys I've met. I met a few of them guys.
Beetlejuice, the angry
Hank.
Dwarf, the drunken dwarf. Hank was on that shit too. Like, it was Jim Ross interacting for 5 minutes with Crackhead Bob and Hank, the angry drunken dwarf, and it was fucking fantastic. You could tell in his face he hated every fucking.
That's what I was gonna say. You know, he was like, "What in the fuck is this?"
He was like, "Thanks a lot. See you later, crackhead."
He already got his money. You know, he didn't give a fuck. Crackhead. See you later, crackhead.
See you later, crackhead. So fucking funny.
It's like me saying goodbye to Jessica's boyfriend. as I'm getting the last of my shit.
Jim Ross saying goodbye to Crackhead Bob is one of my favorite moments in wrestling.
I'm going to start saying that to everybody.
See you later, Crackhead.
See you later,
Crackhead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, up next on this show, we have the Gangstas cutting a promo on the Eliminators. How the match
when shit gets good.
This is when they're talking about the match is official now. They're going to eliminate the Eliminators. They're going to get a championship match. And then Saturn and Cronus are shown packing their bags or unpacking their bags in the locker room. And they discover that the Gangstas have put graffiti on their title belts.
Or wrist tape.
Or wrist tape.
They just made an X on it. Like, what they should have done was had the Gangsters steal the plates off of it. And they would have just had the straps so that it, you know, they could have taken them to Todd and tried to pawn them. You know, the gold. All they did was put tape on it. All they had to do was rip it off. I wouldn't even get offended at that. I would get offended at lack of an effort. That's what I would have got pissed off at. This is I'm supposed to get mad at this?
And I actually wrote down as one of my notes, one of my favorite elements of the Eliminators routine or their chemistry. I love the fact that when they are put into hostile situations, Saturn gets very angry. And Cronus gets very happy that Saturn is very angry. Like, I love that. I love that. Like, Saturn gets pissed and then Cronus is like, we're going to fucking fight now. I love the dynamic of those guys.
And that's the good dynamic of these two teams, because guess who's the other, guess who's the same way?
Yeah, Mustafa. Yeah.
The Gangsters. Mm-hmm. Like, New Jack's like, we're going to fuck you up. We're going to beat you, crack our asses up. And then Mustafa's just like, he's super happy about it. It's like, other than that fucking stupid table spot they tried to do with New Jack, this fucking feud is fantastic. It's the best.
It definitely is, in my opinion, since
we've been talking about ECW, this is the best feud.
Definitely up there, dude. Because it has the most like. Not only does it have legs, because it has depth to it, because they keep doing something else, that's a little more to it, other than the fact that they're just fighting for supremacy, or not supremacy for like, you know, the belts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, now they don't like each other. You know what I mean? Now they're talking about fighting in the subways and, you know, outside of a highs and all the other stuff. So it's got a lot more depth to it, which makes it even more, in the wrestling world, believable. Yeah. Which is good for them.
It's, it's not the same type of feud, but it's almost like a Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express type feud, where it's like these two teams are pretty much equal and they're the same thing, but they're on the different sides of the fence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And they both want to be the best, and they're fighting for the same thing, which is not necessarily the titles. It's for the crown of being the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in this case, with these two teams, not necessarily being the best wrestlers like you would have with the Midnights and the Rock and Rolls, but the most badass motherfuckers.
Yeah, badass motherfuckers, what they want to be. Forget about the gold, the belts, the money. I want to be a badass motherfucker. I don't think so. I'd rather be a rich ass motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah, I'll definitely be a rich little wimp. I spend my money, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I definitely think this was a good, effective segment. And there's more to come later on this, later in the show. The next thing we have on this show is Little Guido from the FBI against Axel Rotten, with JT Smith on the outside of the ring, making no sense whatsoever.
It's the typical Axel Rotten spot. You know, we don't really have much going on with you, so we'll just put you out there in a match.
Yeah.
Just to pretty much kill time. That's what they do all the time, right? How many times have we had a match, just an actual TV match that started, ended, you know, like it was posted? It's usually an Axel match. You know, it's Axel out there, he beats up some guy, and then sometimes it leads to a whole bunch of other shit, but yeah, it's usually Axel's in that spot. And that's Axel's fucking wheelhouse, man. Like, Axel is so good at what he does. That's the best part about it, you know? He's not great at, like, one thing. He's good at, like, what he knows how to do. He's good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always liked Axel for that.
It's like, it's like Johnny Rods or Jose Estrada at the Garden. You don't have a story or anything, but we're going to put you in there on every card. You're going to have a good match. You know, I don't know. Just, you're right. He's that's kind of what they're doing with him a lot lately on the show. But at least he's on the show.
Of course. He's got to have a role. I mean, cuz you got to fill the show out, and the crowd likes him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pop for whatever he does.
I wouldn't even say that it was,
so to speak.
Sorry, Nate, I wouldn't even say it's like a Jose or whatever. I'd say it might be dumb. You know, it might be a bad comparison. But I'd say it's almost like a Tito thing. Like, you're over with this crowd. And, you know, it's like you're the baby face that the crowd likes, and mm-hmm. nobody's going to boo you. Now. He's like,
yeah, he's not gonna do anything wrong.
Yeah, Axel's like the Tito Santana of ECW.
Yep, mid card to the extreme.
You're never gonna be our champ, but you're always gonna be around, and everybody's gonna love you, buddy.
The crowd's gonna love you, Axel. Well, we got nothing for you.
Axel winds up beating Little Guido. And then we get JT and Guido in the ring, and JT repeatedly, I swear to God, he said, "It's all right," like 37 times.
It's all right. Nothing personal.
It's all right. It's like, is Fred the Elephant Boy here? It's all right. Yeah. And then, of course, he gives Guido a comb, and Guido's combing his hair. I like the FBI. It entertains me, but JT was annoying me with that fucking "it's all right" shit. I was like, all right, it's all right. That's enough.
It's all right. We get it.
The next match.
Turn out the lights. The party's over, buddy.
Yeah, turn out the lights. The next match is Taz, escorted to the ring by Team Taz, of course. Joey Styles says he's going to face Devin Storm from WCW. I think Devin Storm appeared on one Nitro, but yeah. Good try. Devin Storm from WCW against Taz. And I like the match. This was a good match. I like Devin Storm, so.
I worked him. I didn't like the match at all.
No?
Oh, no, man. And it definitely wasn't anything against Chris personally.
When you worked him, was he working as Devin Storm, or was it when he worked as Crowbar?
No, he was Devin Storm.
Okay.
But I expected, I don't know, I was all excited. I really was. And I was all looking forward to it. But then, like, when we're putting the match together, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, something is, it just, we didn't click. I don't know what it was, you know? He's one of them guys... Not that there's anything wrong with the way these guys work, but everything has to be choreographed, called ahead of time, and no spontaneity, and that's how when we worked, I was disappointed. I don't mean the match was bad. It wasn't bad. It just wasn't what I was hoping for going into it. Right. I was like expecting like, oh, we're gonna go out there and tear it up. This is gonna be like awesome, but it wasn't. It was like, oh, you know what? What's this guy's? You know, what's the? Is it him or is it the guys that he's working? You know, that made mm-hmm. him that made the myth. You know what I'm saying? It was all right.
But yeah, I like this match. I thought, you know, Taz gave Devin Storm a little bit. You know, he got some offense and shit, and kind of ends up getting fucked up on a table spot. But
dude, he was supposed to throw him through a table. He was supposed to throw him through a table, and he didn't even hit the fucking table.
I know. When is Taz gonna stop telling, or when is anybody gonna stop telling people to stop grabbing a hold of the top rope when Taz bellies the belly over the top rope? Because I know Taz is short. This is not
like a short. Like, I'm short. Not even taller than the fucking rope.
I know. I'm saying it's not like it's a Taz short joke, but Taz has to throw you over to the point where he can't get you over enough that you have to vault yourself over the top rope to help him out. Maybe they shouldn't do it. Or find another way to do it is what I'm trying to say. Because yeah, he's all throwing himself over the top rope and he missed the table. I was like, God damn. Ain't that some shit?
Taz should do that move on Bill Alfonso's shoulders. Maybe that would make it work.
Daddy.
Get up here, Daddy.
The only person that Taz could throw over the top rope through a table was El Puerto Rico.
So my question was to ask Chad and Aaron, do you think this match was supposed to end by count out?
Oh, I think so.
Like, do you? I wondered if, because I pictured Kata Hajime, and I was like, I wonder if Devin Storm like legit was knocked out or something and they had to count him out.
No, I think it was supposed to end in a count out because he was supposed to actually go through the fucking table. But he missed it.
And I think they were going to bring Devin back too, because I know he worked. He did work a couple other smaller spot shows. That it wasn't just his one and done. Mm-hmm. I think they had plans for him, but I don't think the plans worked out after all this nonsense. But Devin's a good worker, man. I thought he was solid. Like I said, me and him just didn't gel chemistry in the ring, but it didn't take anything away from what I thought about him.
Yeah, and I was always a fan Devin, of him. And to be honest, me too. And to be honest with you, I was just gonna say, to be honest with you, you can throw a lot of shade at WCW in the year 2000. WCW in the year 2000 is fucking awful. It's fucking awful. But Daphne and Crowbar were one of the shining lights of that fucking 2000 WCW. But yeah, I always liked him too. I thought Devin Storm was I was a mark for him.
Well, I'm not there yet, so I haven't seen it.
You're not missing anything. Don't go out of your way. They're like it's like sifting through a pile of shit to find a diamond.
Oh, might not. Okay. I ain't doing that either.
It's almost like it's almost like sifting through a pile of needles to find a needle. Like, you're not gonna find it unless you're obviously looking.
Is
for it
anything yeah, like Dev- putting a hat on a hat?
It is. It's a hat. Okay, on a hat.
That's all I wanted to hear.
We end this episode of ECW, of course, with Pulp Fiction. Taz cuts a promo throwing shade at Sabu because we are getting toward Sabu versus Taz, of course. They show Missy Hyatt talking trash about Fred the Elephant Boy. Dreamer with Beulah and Kimona. Beulah and Kimona both look satisfied. Dreamer looks like he just masturbated.
Watching them.
The the Dudleys. The Dudleys are.
They were just both like, talk about a sticky situation.
I'm hardcore. The Dudleys.
It's the scissor, scissor, bang, chang.
The Dudleys are shown with Dances with Dudleys in a wheelchair. So I'm just like, I honestly, and again, like I've said before on this show, I have not rewatched ECW a lot over the years. So sometimes we will be watching these shows and some of this stuff, even though I know I've seen it before, it still feels new to me.
Oh, all the time for me.
It still shocks me every time I see DW Dudley, because I honestly God thought that guy was gone in like fucking 95 and he's still around in middle 96. Like, he's still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do that all the time. I'm like, dude, I thought, you know, all these guys were gone. But I'm surprised they didn't talk to Billy Black.
I'm kidding.
Where's he doing the fucking Pulp Fiction thing?
We get a Devon promo out of this though, and he does the thou shalt not. He doesn't even do the on this one. I mean, WWE Network edited it out, but he did say thou shalt not fuck with the Dudleys. And again, you guys can Pulp Fiction. I'm going through it. You guys can stop me if you have any comments. We see Blue Meanie. I think with a hooker.
Days. Oh, that was noticed.
That's the girl that came into the ring and kissed him. The one that I wanted to know.
Remember a couple weeks ago? My note was just Meanie with some whore. That's what I know.
Well, yeah. I mean, but where was I? Where was she when I was there? I don't mind some whore. Fuck, I married one.
Meanie tells Stevie he got to second base.
Which is, in their world, what?
Well, I just think it's funny that he only got to second base with a hooker.
He's the Blue Meanie.
Yeah.
It's like Forrest Gump. Like he's done before they even get undressed.
He's sitting on the porch like,
He was done after he hung the phone up. And then, like, what are you going to do when she finally shows up? you already finished.
And the gangsters talking shit as they're about to leave the arena. They walk out the back doors, and there are the Eliminators waiting for them. A fight ensues, and the Eliminators retaliate the X on the belts by spray painting an X on the gangsters themselves. And
that was pretty cool.
Yes, yes. I like that. I like the because it's I love the dynamic of these teams, because it's finally somebody where the gangsters have, again, I said it last week like five times, but they've met their match. Like, the gangsters in their mindset walking out the back door, they don't think anybody's going to jump them.
Right. That was the cool thing about it.
Here's these crazy fucking honkies jumping them.
Yeah, that was the cool thing about it, because it's exactly what was so cool about it. The gangsters cut the promo thinking, like, you know, ain't nothing going to happen to us. Ain't nothing going to happen to us. You know, what are these two fucking idiots going to do, kind of thing? And we're just going to leave out of here and go to the Waffle House or go rob a liquor store. I don't fucking know. But, you know, little did they know that the Eliminators weren't playing games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same on the flip side. Like, the Eliminators are going to walk out and be like, oh, we're going to go to Cracker Barrel. And now, here's the fucking gangsters attacking them. You know, it's like I was saying with, like, it's a different aspect of it, because they're not the
I want to hear New Jack going, on the promo
they're not going with the work rate of it, but it's the same thing as, like I said, with like the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express, or the Midnight Express and the Fantastics. It's like those teams were out wrestling each other, and these two teams are out beating the fuck out of each other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I still want to hear New Jack great talk fucking about Cracker Barrel. Because it's so funny to me. At the Cracker Barrel.
I'm willing to bet $1 bill. Just $1 bill. I'm willing to bet $1 bill if I search through all the New Jack promos. He probably brings up Cracker Barrel at least once. Or the New Jack shoot interviews. He probably brings up Cracker Barrel at least once.
Oh, he has to. They have okra. Is he going to eat?
They have okra, yeah.
Yeah. Scrapple.
Scrapple Barrel.
I mean, it's gonna be Cracker Barrel Waffle House. Where else is he gonna eat? And then when he's in Philadelphia, it's the Oregon Diner. But everybody ate there anyway.
And every once in a while, you just got to get the shit to the Denny's. But other than that,
no, you don't.
Well, I gave this week's episode of ECW a B. I don't know what you guys rated it, but I gave it a B. I thought it was decent.
Yeah, it was totally good. A B is totally fine because it wasn't a show that I needed to take a lot of copious notes about. You know, because once you start talking about what happened, like who was involved, then you know everything else spoke for itself. You know, Scorpio, Shane, and you know Ray, you know all the names that were involved. You know, even Axel and Guido. You know how it was going to end, pretty much. You know what I mean? It wasn't like it was everything spoke for itself, which was made for a good, well paced show, in my opinion. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think a B was fair.
Oh, and I'm sorry, I did forget one thing. They did mention on this show Brian Pillman having his car accident.
Oh, I didn't hear that either.
Joey did mention that. At some point mentioned Brian Pillman having his car accident. He said he talks about how he had the accident. He's in the hospital, but he's doing okay. And they invite him to come and speak on ECW TV when he's feeling better. I don't think he ever comes back. He's going to go to the WWF soon, but
I got my WWF money. I got my fuck you money. I'm out. Yeah.
But yep. Yeah, they did mention Pillman.
Yep. A B was a good rating for that show, man. I agree. It may not Aaron, have been a B plus, just a B.
Aaron, did you land there too?
Well, I have, honestly, I landed a little higher. I landed with a B plus.
Okay, we're still all in the ballpark.
I just like, I just thought it was a good fucking show, and it told a great story. And the only reason that it wasn't an A for me was just because. There was a little bit of, there was like a couple segments where it was just like, meh, whatever. But for the most part, I thought it was a really good fucking show, and I enjoyed the fuck out of it. I liked this show.
Yeah, good stuff.
Well, that's going to be a wrap for this week's edition of Reliving the Extreme. I want to thank all of our listeners for checking us out each and every week here on any podcast platform you listen to. You can also check out the WNR Podcast Network on YouTube. I also put these shows up on YouTube there, the WNR Podcast Network. And you can join our Facebook group, the WNR Podcast Network Facebook group as well. And unless Chad or Aaron have anything else to say, I'm just going to sign off this week and say we'll see you next week, everybody.
Yep. Fuck Andrew.
Auf Wiedersehen, Zane.